Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And of course, it's time for another edition of Garden Talk. And today, Ed Lyon is our guest. Ed is director of the Allen Centennial Garden. He's been a guest on our program many times, and it's always great to have him here. And certainly, it's great to hear from you as well with your questions or comments. As here we are, almost to the end of 2009. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got a question about flowers. Maybe it's about shrubs, or maybe it's about possibly trees. Whatever. Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Ed, welcome back.
It's great to be here.
The things look a little quieter around the Allen Centennial Gardens these days.
Yeah, all the activity is inside. And it's kind of interesting because somebody just said to me, oh, you must be laid back, not doing much. And it's actually to the contrary, because this is when we do all the planning for next year.
And you got some exciting things to that you're looking forward to in next year?
We do. Our theme this past year was ornamental edibles, and it went over so well, we've decided to expand on that this upcoming year, and we're going to call it the duality of plants. So what we're looking at, like we did with the ornamental edibles, are plants that are not only decorative, but they have other uses as well. For instance, cutting and everlastings, dyes and textiles, agronomic crops, perfumes, beverages and teas. So you'll be able to come in and see all these plants that you can design with and are decorative, but also have multiple purposes.
That sounds really exciting.
It's going to take a lot of research and a lot of ordering.
Well, we have some callers online, and I guess we can just as well go to the phones. If you'd like to join us, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to the phones and Peggy in Wauwatosa. Peggy, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a gorgeous angel blush hydrangea bush. Blooms beautifully, but it's very floppy. I do an awful lot of staking and sometimes not with great results. Any suggestions?
Well, first thing, if you're doing any fertilizer, take the fertilizer away. It doesn't need it. That makes for leggy growth. Okay. The other thing you can do, angel blush should be a panicle hydrangea, and it might be getting leggy also because it could use some cutting and shearing to bring it back to shorter stems.
Okay.
And you do that just like you would with any other shrub. I have a number of panicle hydrangeas myself. I kind of make a judgment of where I think I want the branch length to be so it's shorter and stronger, cut back to a bud. And not only will you make a shorter, stronger branch, but it will branch out more and make the shrub thicker as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Did you know that this past Thursday was National Maple Syrup Day?
No, I didn't. And I come originally from New York, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, New York, where they probably, Wisconsin is number four.
Well, New York, at the time I lived, there was number two to Vermont.
Yeah, it's probably Vermont, New York, and I don't know who comes before Wisconsin. We're fourth. But we, Jim Packard looked up some figures on that. We produce more than 200,000 gallons of syrup and maple sap from about 670,000 taps in Wisconsin.
Wow. You figure out what that is with the cost of a gallon of syrup. That's a lot of money.
Well, anyway, I had to throw that in. I don't know why it happens. You'd think it would be more in the spring when they might have a maple syrup day, you know, when those trees are producing sap. But
it does seem an odd time.
Let's go to Laura in Madison. Laura, hi.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. Well, I have a question about a bittersweet vine.
Okay.
I moved into an old house, and the vine probably has been there the entire time that the house has been there. It's a really big, old vine that grows up the side of the garage and then continues on up the side of an evergreen tree. It probably is about 50 feet tall. my question is, it's totally taking over the evergreen tree. And so what do I do? Do I just cut the bittersweet off and hope that the evergreen tree grows through the vine, or what should I do?
Yeah, and it almost sounds like you don't. You may not even have our native bittersweet. You might have the Asian form of it. In fact, we had that form in Allen Gardens growing on our pergola, and I cut the entire thing out. I'm going to replace it with a brand new bittersweet. It's out of Bailey Nurseries in Minnesota. Not only is this our native bittersweet and not invasive, but it has male and female on the same plant, which is the first that this has happened. It's called Autumn Revolution, and it has an enormous berry. So I've taken our oriental form out entirely, and it sounds like that may be what you have. And it was doing the same thing. It was growing into a linden tree. The linden tree is now poorly shaped as a result of that. So, yes, get it out of that evergreen. You know, let that evergreen grow back out because it is competing for light, and you don't want that with evergreens.
Okay.
If you want to save this particular vine, you can cut it back, and it will regenerate new growth. My suggestion is maybe even replacing it with a newer and better cultivar.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Wondering about, we got a lot of snow out there. How do you protect the fruit trees and the berries, the trees from hungry rabbits and deer and so forth?
And that's going to be an issue, and it has been in recent years. We get these really heavy snows, and then on top of that, what happens is we get these sort of thaws, and then those thaws freeze up that snow, so it's even more difficult to get down, and you can't blame these rodents and the deer because they can't get to it. And we've seen massive damage in recent years as a result. Unfortunately, most of what you're going to be doing to protect them probably should have been done before the snows, if you're doing fencing or netting. The other big thing that I find that people make mistakes on is they'll put up a 3-foot fence to keep the rabbits out, and then we get snow that goes up so high the rabbits are going to go over it anyways. So you've spent money and you've gone through the labor of doing something where you're not. Most of it right now is you kind of have to be diligent. If it does look like you're seeing tracks in the snow, find some way to get some wiring. You can just take something as simple as chicken wire and create just a cage or something and get over some of those plants or around them because you're going to start seeing some real damage.
Yeah, that there really is a crusty snow out there. I mean, I walked, and I'm a pretty big guy, and I walked right on top of the snow out in our backyard there, and it'd be pretty hard for those animals to get through it.
Yep, and those are some of the worst because the only thing left for them to eat is anything coming up through that snow. And they're going to do damage higher on plants than you would normally get otherwise.
And, you know, talking about damage, you drive around Madison and other parts of the state as well, and that heavy snowfall really took a toll on limbs, tree limbs and shrubs, evergreens, a lot of them were just snapped right off in half.
Yes, in fact, timing of your comment there, I had the grounds department in only just this morning. We have a mature Scots pine that had a major branch snap, came down into a hawthorn tree, so we have damage in the hawthorn. We're going to lose a fairly significant part of this wonderful Scots pine. We had some white pines with snapped off branches. This last snow was very heavy and very damaging, and you'll drive all around the area and see people cutting branches out of trees.
And the pruning on those, actually, it's not a bad time, I guess, to be pruning. You don't want to be pruning in the under these circumstances, but...
Right. And, you know, when people ask when's the best time to get in and cut and prune on trees, I say any time in the winter because obviously you don't have the disease and insects out that will then invade that plant and create issues down the line. This isn't the kind of pruning we like to do, especially the way some of these branches snap off. We've got to then get in and somehow make a better cut on those plants.
Ed Lyon, our guest today, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, as we talk with him about all things gardening indoors and outdoors. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us, and the email address is talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. So give us a call with your questions and comments. What kinds of things are you hearing from people as they talk with you? You're an expert. Concerns, issues that are coming up this time of year?
Yeah, I think most of it's looking ahead to things like, you know, what are you going to plant next year? What are the new mm-hmm. plants? In fact, I'm going to be doing a talk for our Wisconsin Hardy Plant Society in February on what are the new plants. This is the time of year the catalogs are already coming in. We're all looking at, you know, oh, wow, this is, you know, something new for next year, and we get excited about that. Obviously, the snow has been a major issue right now, the damage that's come from that. And again, we'll probably head into a time period when rodent damage will be probably one of the biggest concerns as people start to notice what's happening.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of that, unfortunately. Judy in Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Judy.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about my white cedar tree, which was planted next to a black walnut, which I didn't realize was there, just sort of growing up in the neighborhood of the white cedar. And the black walnut is dead now, but it sort of inhibited the growth of the white cedar tree for a couple of years, and it looks a little straggly. What can I do to help the white cedar tree recover from the damage from the black walnut?
Yeah, if it's scraggly, certainly you can shear on it. That helps considerably because then it'll flush out with thicker growth. And arborvitaes will take, as you probably know, all kinds of shearing. So you can shear throughout the season next year. That would help. I'm usually not a big advocate of putting a lot of fertilizer on plants, but if they appear to be in a weakened state, some low-grade fertility. Don't throw a lot of a highly soluble nitrogen on it, but giving it a time release, maybe a 10-10-10 next spring would probably help it as well. Obviously, as those roots die out on the black walnut, because they can produce that juglan for several years even after dead, that's going to help as well. Fortunately, arborvitaes are extremely shallow-rooted. And I, you know, if it didn't kill it outright and it's just sort of doesn't look real thrifty, I think you'll be fine. Just kind of do some light shearing on it to help fill it out over time.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for calling. Teresa in Duluth, Minnesota. We're on to you now. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I've got a question about native plum trees. I've got a whole bunch of them, and they're doing beautifully. But the last couple of years, the leaves have started getting, if they were a soft dough, it's like somebody poked fingers through them. And the leaves will curl up. They get full of these little pokes that stand up probably a quarter an inch. And then all the leaves fall off the tree. And I have no idea what it is or what to do about it.
Yeah, I think your best bet, it's really hard to diagnose it without seeing it, and I'm not a plant pathologist. I think your best bet is if it occurs again next year, as soon as you see that it's happening, cut off a branch and make sure you have both healthy and leaves with an issue on it and get it into the plant pathology department here on campus. They're very good at diagnosing the issues. They can tell you exactly what to do with it. I hate to diagnose without actually seeing it. I might tell you the wrong thing to do. It sounds probably insect is my first guess, but herbicides and herbicide drift can often mimic some of these issues as well. So I think your best bet is to check with the plant pathology department.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. And we'll be taking some more calls. You can join us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@WPR.org. Talking here with Ed Lyon today, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with my guest Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens. And let's turn to Larry in Menominee Falls next. Larry, hi.
How you doing, sir?
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I've got some either red cedar or white cedar. I'm not a real big tree guy, but they're very tall, very thin, go way up. They're 20 to 25 feet high, and I've got a lot of damage in the tops because of the snow. Now, my question is, can I go in there, cut the top 8-10 feet off, then in spring go up and tie the tops together, and will that tree sort of grow back in, or what's my best results?
First, tell me whether the foliage is prickly or if it's sort of a flattened foliage without prickliness.
It's a flat foliage. It's a cedar-type tree.
Then you have white cedar or arborvitae, and there's a difference between that and our red cedar. You can top them. They will create a new leader over time. That shouldn't affect them at all. And that's what you're asking, is if you can top them out and if they'll create a new leader?
That's correct. But do I have to put a rope or something around or some type of tie to keep the top from spreading, or can I just top it and leave it that way?
I would just top it if you've already have got splitting and damage, and then let them grow out a new leader.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
All right. Thanks, Larry. Helen and Ladysmith, we're on to you now. Hi, Helen.
Hi there. What I'm interested in is to know how to start a pomegranate plant from the seed.
Pomegranate plant from seed.
Well, you've gone beyond my expertise.
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know whether I'm supposed to plant it fresh out of the pomegranate or dry it.
Yeah, and there are a couple of wonderful books that will tell you for every seed out there what the process is, and I don't have access to them. However, usually when we get a question like this, we'll have a caller that will call in and tell you just how to do that.
I hope so.
Stay listening.
Yeah, okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And if not, go to the library and look for such a text, and they'll tell you what the process is.
Chad in Athens, on to you now. Hi, Chad.
Hello. I hope you can help me, sir. I put dormant oil spray on my fruit trees in the spring, and now I think I read the directions, and it said use such and such amount, and I thought, well, it didn't look like it was doing much, and I put it on way, way, way heavier, and now the bark is looking funny, but I don't know. Can you put too much dormant oil spray on to make a long story short?
Yes, you can with almost any chemical that we're talking about, whether they're herbicides, pesticides, dormant oils. Again, we so advise people, there is a reason that they put the recommendations that they do on these products. Too much can damage or don't do the process. And as I tell people, believe me, if more will do the job better, they're certainly going to put down more because they want to sell the product. So it's very important to follow the recommendations, because they've done a lot of research to say that this is the proper concentration.
Sir, one quick question. Do you think the bark will come back? It looks like the bark is almost like dying on these younger fruit trees.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll come back?
Without seeing them, I can't tell you. Do you have a local cooperative extension office?
Rock County, sure.
I didn't catch where you
were
from.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Athens.
Marathon County.
Marathon County.
Yeah, I would take pictures of them and probably send them in to somebody in Extension. They'll send it on to a fruit specialist and probably they can tell you better than I can.
Well, I learned a lesson about reading directions, so thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. The number for you to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Bill in Rock County, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Thank you. Say, a few years back, we bought and planted three apple trees, three different kinds, and I had to cut one off because the pine tree was growing into it. And a year later, all kinds of suckers were growing out of the stump that I left. My question is this. They were all three dwarf trees, and I never maintained them like I was supposed to. So now, all three at one time had, you know, they've just grown way much taller than they're supposed to be. If I were to take and trim them back to, they're probably 18 feet tall now. If I were to trim them back to 10 this winter, was that going to damage the two that I left behind?
We never recommend pruning back harder than 20% of the tree per year. So you can get your size brought down, but it's going to take you a few years to get down to what you're looking to get it down to. You overdo that, you're going to severely damage that tree. And as far as the one that died, the suckers that are coming up are likely not the tree that you put in the ground. Most fruit trees are grafted on a rootstock. So when you've cut the top portion off, whatever they grafted it to, then it sort of reawakens that rootstock. So what's growing out of that rootstock is whatever the original tree was that was grafted to, which usually
you're not going to be happy about.
Yeah, it's usually not as desirable as the one that you purchased.
Okay, in this case, I cut it off at about 3 feet above the ground because I thought I could use that trunk for my uncle for some carving. So all these suckers are growing right out of the trunk. But yeah, it doesn't make a difference. I'm going to cut that off on the ground anyway.
Okay.
All right, thank you much.
All right, thank you for calling. Lisa in Wrightstown, hello.
Hello. I have a question regarding a book recommendation. My husband and I, we've purchased several tree identification books, but we can't seem to find one that's good enough to give us specifics about trees in the Wisconsin and Upper Michigan area. Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, one of my favorites, and actually the author is a friend of mine. His name is Guy Sternberg, Sternburg. He and another gentleman named Jim Wilson wrote a book. It's almost encyclopedic. There's a new version of it out within the last couple of years. I can't tell you the exact title, but it's something about native trees. Jim owns a arboretum in the Springfield, Illinois area, and he was the founder of the International Oak Society. This is a very, very well-written book. And there's a few others that if you're looking to actually key out trees, but I have a feeling that you're looking to just visually identify what a tree is. But that one is a must-have that's in my library and I use extensively. The other woody plant book that we call The Bible is Michael Durr's book. And in fact, he just put out a sixth edition of that book, and that's called Woody Ornamental Plants. But if you look for Michael Durr, D-I-R-R, that is the book we all consider the Bible for woody ornamentals.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling, Lisa. Amy in Madison, your turn. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Ed. Hi, Larry.
Hi.
I have had the pleasure of meeting you both on campus, so hello again.
Well, hello to you.
Yes, good to hear from you.
This past summer, my family and I, we had toured the Allen Centennial Gardens and were taken by the gorgeous tomatoes that you had. And I remember talking with you, Ed. You mentioned some trick with using Epsom salts, and I was hoping you could explain that again.
Oh, yes. That's an old. I actually originally come from a farm background, and that's a trick we used. And what it is Epsom salts are heavy in manganese. Not magnesium, but manganese. Mm-hmm. And tomato plants apparently like manganese. And it doesn't take a great deal of it. Well, my grandfather used a vegetable garden with me, and he went crazy and overboard putting it on. It ended up with huge amounts of vegetation and not much as nitrogen would do and not much in the way of fruit. But just, you know, shaking out a little bit of this Epsom salts around the plant, working it in a little bit around the soil, does generate quite an amount of growth on tomato plants.
Okay. And that would work for a container garden as well?
Oh, yeah, most certainly.
Really? Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Thanks for calling. Irma in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Irma.
Hi. Thanks for your program.
Sure.
You have mentioned before service berries planted instead of blueberries.
Yes.
Are they edible?
Yes.
If you can get to the fruit before the birds do.
Oh, and are they really, really little, or are they about the size of blueberries?
They're smaller than a blueberry. Yeah. And there's a number of different species of amelanchier or serviceberry or shadberry. They all go have various names. And it'll be a larger, it'll be more of a tree form than a blueberry. A blueberry is going to be more of a bush form. In fact, where I grew up in upstate New York, we had a native serviceberry there. It was amelanchier canadensis. And my grandmother used to make pies out of them, and there is, wow. And we called them shadberries where I came from. And believe me, my favorite pie was my grandma's shadberry pie.
And it makes the Saskatoon berry. They make wonderful jams too. Wonderful jams.
I'm looking forward. I hope to be able to plant one this spring.
Well, keep it. Try and get them in. If you're planting it, don't plant it in too shady of an area.
Okay.
It likes a little bit of sun, I think.
Yeah, it likes all full sun. There are smaller cultivars than others, too. So talk to, go to a good supplier, talk to them, tell them you probably want one of the smaller cultivars. And it's a really nice multi-season plant because it'll have beautiful white flowers in the spring. It'll have the fruit, and it can get spectacular fall color as well.
Mm-hmm. I have an unfortunate experience where mine are planted in too shady of an area, so the results are not nearly as good in the shade, believe me.
Well, I thank you for all the information.
All right. Thank you for calling, Irma. Lou in Milwaukee, on to you. Hi, Lou.
How you doing?
Good.
Recipe for pomegranate seeds.
Yes.
Germination.
Germinating pomegranate seeds.
I knew somebody would know.
Yeah, I got it off the net. I didn't know myself. It says clean the seed, soak in water for 24 hours, then do not cover the seed with soil. Soil temperature should be at 70 to 75 degrees. Takes 30 to 40 days to germinate. And then it says transfer the plant after the second set of true leaves has formed.
Okay.
And that's it.
Well, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
With soil temperatures that high,
that's pretty high.
You're going to want it on a germinating blanket, probably. They actually create these. You plug them in and you put your plants on it, and it generates that heat for the root systems.
Mm-hmm. Lou, thank you.
Okay, problem.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate you looking that up for us. And more callers online here, but there's some open lines for you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. An email from Margaret who has, here again, small and very large arborvitaes that were hit hard by the snowstorm. Some of the smaller ones are nearly on the ground, covered by heavy snow. The large ones, the 12 to 14 footers, have a lower one-third hanging down covered with snow. I gently knocked off the snow, but the branches are still hanging down. Should I just count on losing these branches or whole trees, or will they bounce back in the warmer weather?
They will come back. Once this it warms up so the sap starts flowing, as long as they have not literally cracked or broken from the tree. After that storm, I went out and we had some 6-foot arborvitaes in the gardens, and they were just bent over almost into complete use. And I obviously they were small enough. I got the snow off them right away, and they remained bent over in the U shape. But I know that when it warms up, the sap starts flowing. They're going to
straighten up.
Come upright. If it doesn't literally just tear into those branches, you'll be okay, providing we don't get yet another one of these snows that does further damage.
Tom in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I've got a crabapple tree that I cut down to the ground about 5 years ago, and the suckers still keep coming up, even though I drive over them with the lawnmower, and I'm wondering, what can I do to finally stop that?
For one thing, quit driving over with your lawnmower. the root stock on that tree is still alive. Plants are extremely smart and clever. So every time you go and you cut them off, it's going to get back at you by saying, well, geez, next time I better throw out some more shoots to make sure something survives. There are some chemicals, if you still have access to the trunk, that you can actually get and pour onto that trunk that will then kill out the rootstock. My suspicion is your rootstock's still alive there, and it keeps generating more seedlings.
What kind of chemical do you think I should use?
There's one that I pick up at the co-op, and I can't even really remember the name of it offhand, and I don't want to tell you the wrong chemical. I would go into either a garden center or like a farmer's co-op and just tell them what your situation is, and they'll link you up with the right chemical.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Ron in Green Bay, I think, next. Ron, hi.
Hi. I have two questions. One is snow damage on, I think it's an Australian pine. I don't quite know the difference between an Australian pine and a Scotch pine. But when this storm came through last week, it broke off the top third of the tree. And before that happened, it was about a 15-foot tree. So I'm wondering, am I stuck with a 3/4 of an Australian pine, or will a main shoot develop and it will look again like a 15-foot tree in several years, or, should I rip it out? What should I do with it?
Regardless, and it'd be an Austrian, not Australian, regardless of whether you have an Austrian or a Scots pine, it's very hard to say whether it will develop a leader or not. They start out looking rather pyramidal, sort of Christmas tree-like, but that's not going to be the mature growth pattern of either of those trees. They end up opening up. They have sort of wide-spreading branches as they mature. So they're not like maybe some of these other trees, conifers, that have a true leader, that when you cut it off, it'll go right back into producing a leader like a fir or a spruce. So it's hard to determine what kind of growth structure it will put on. Personally, I really like that sort of wide-spreading nature. You'll know it's a Scots pine if with age it starts showing orange coloration, sort of a cinnamon coloration, to the bark in those branches, which the Austrian pine will not do. So it's a matter of what do you want to be the final look of that tree. If you're looking for a pyramidal type tree, then maybe you'll want to take it down and put something else in. If you don't mind that it doesn't end up going straight up and it starts doing this wide-spreading nature, then I'd top it and see where it goes from there.
Okay.
Second question, and Larry, this is kind of to settle an argument between my wife and I.
Okay.
I was listening to your program last year, but kind of passively, and you had a question about the needles falling off in the fall and early winter on white pines. And I thought your guest said that was not normal, that the tree is probably being stressed for one reason or another, which is causing those needles to fall off. So
absolutely. Actually, that's not true at all. And I don't know whether your wife
or... Well, it might have been me.
Yeah. I used to work in a specialty nursery for about almost 10 years where we dealt with conifers. And there was about a period of time in the fall, we could expect almost every single call that was going to come in was asking about their white pines or related pines dying. Pines replace all of their needles within a specific time period. White pines happen to be every 3 years. They're completely regenerating the needles that they have on. So every year, they're dropping a third of their needles, and they drop them from the interior. And people will call, and about they see a third of the needles in the fall drying up and falling off. Your indication that something's wrong with a pine is if the needles are dying from the outside in. But if they're dropping off from the interior and you're losing roughly about a third of those needles, which really does look strikingly bad, all it's doing is it's dropping those needles because it's going to replace a third of them.
Ah, very good.
Okay.
each one of us can leave the argument with a valid opinion.
There you go.
There you go, Ron.
I thought you were going to have to buy your dinner.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Say, Michael in Menasha emailed us and said the Epsom salts are magnesium sulfate.
No, I was thinking it was a manganese, so I had that wrong.
Yeah.
Thanks for the correction.
Let's go to Adam, who's just driving through the state. Adam, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Japanese snowbell, Styrax japonicus.
Lucky you.
Well, maybe. I used to work on a ball burlap nursery. We dug up a tree, and then it shot a sucker from the root in the hole. So I dug this up, took it home, planted it in my yard. It's a beautiful tree. It's growing at a normal rate, but it will not flower. And our trees on the tree farm always flowered within a couple of years. And I don't think it was a graft. So is there something I should do to it?
Where do you live, Adam?
I live in western Indiana, kind of near Champaign, Illinois.
Ah, that's why it's surviving for you. They're not particularly hardy for us here. My first guess was that you had something that was below a graft, and I still wonder if maybe they were grafted. I can't imagine that they weren't, especially if they're being northern grown. It's not likely they were growing them on their own rootstock. Other than that, I can't really tell you what to do to force it into flower.
I bet it was grafted.
Yeah, I would think so.
All right. Well, you know, the foliage by itself is pretty enough. So if it doesn't flower, I guess I'm content. But I kind of liked having the lilac smell. I was hoping I'd have that lilac smell in my yard, but maybe not, you know?
Well, maybe not. You can always make another planting as well.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Adam. And we'll take some more calls. Our guest today, Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ed Lyon, our guest today, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, and lots of callers online and a few emails too, but let's go to the phones. Mary in Denmark, we are on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a question.
Go right ahead.
Huge cedar tree. In the last, the deer.
Wait a second. You're breaking up a little bit. Could you start over again?
Okay. We had my huge cedar tree. Sorry.
You know what? We lost you, Mary. Tell you what, you might try calling back again. Maybe in a if you're on a cell, maybe you've got a. And you're driving, maybe in a few minutes you'll be in a better spot. I'm sorry we can't get through to you. So we'll turn to Steve in Black River Falls instead. Steve, hi.
Hi there. I was wondering if I had a pretty good pumpkin, squash, and sweet corn crop this last season, and I kept some of the seeds and the ears of corn. Now, can I plant those for this next season? And expect a decent crop, or is there something with the store-bought seeds that they treat them with something that helps fertilize them? Or
no, it's not a matter of treatment. It's that the hybridization, you weren't going to get back the plant that you actually planted. My recommendation is for the cost of the seed is just to go get new seed next year.
Okay.
When we hybridize these plants, then you're not getting, you know, there's variability in the genetics of that seed when you plant it.
Okay. All right. Good.
Thank you for calling. And Larry in Oshkosh, on to you. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. My question is, I have some grapevines, Concord and a couple other varieties, have been in probably 8 or 10 years. What I'm experiencing is a lack of fruit. Good sunshine on them. I see the blossoms come in the spring. I keep them pruned, but I don't seem to get a fruit set. I'm wondering if maybe a lack of bees for pollination might be an issue, and I'll hang up and listen to the response.
Yeah, that's out of my area of expertise, I'm afraid, in viticulture. Actually, we've been seeing more of the bees coming back recently, so I'm not sure that would be the problem.
There's a a great publication by University Extension, which you can go to the Learning Store at UWEX, University of Wisconsin Extension Learning Store, if you just write that in. The publication is titled Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, and it's an excellent publication, and there may be some clues in that publication. You can read it online or you make a copy of it offline for free. But I highly recommend that book and take a look at it. Maybe there's something with your pruning too, and again, or fertilizing.
And again, check with your local extension office and they'll put you in touch with a fruit specialist.
We're actually doing, Jim Packard reminding me that we're doing a program on bee colony collapse on the 30th of December. So there's a show coming up on that. We'll be getting kind of an update on what's going on with our bees on the 30th. More callers here. Let's turn to Bill in Rock County. Hi, Bill.
Hi again. Thank you. Lady called and mentioned something about blueberries, and I thought maybe you could help me. I've got four blueberry plants planted, and between the four of them, one's been in the ground 3 years. The other three have been in the ground 2 years, and I see maybe three, four berries off of one plant, and that's it. I do see flowers in the spring, but I don't see any berries. And it's covered and screened so that the birds can't get to them. Any ideas what I can do to make that produce? I'm big on wild berries.
Have you acidified your soil at all, by the way?
I have not. I don't know what I should do there.
Yeah, we almost always get questions about blueberries. And the problem with any of these plants in what we call the Ericaceae family, the blueberries, is they don't do well for us anyways because we have highly alkaline soils. And it's very difficult to it's not so difficult to acidify your soil as it is to keep it acidic.
To keep it, yeah.
So everything we're doing to acidify our soils, we get our rains and our water here when we water our plants just brings that level right back up mm-hmm. again. It sounds like they're growing for you. We do have some blueberries in Allen Gardens. We do keep sulfur on them. We do a variety of things. It's a lot of work to try and keep those acidic levels down. Your issue sounds again like the gentleman that had the grapes. They seem to be flowering, but then your flowers are not actually producing fruit. Whether that's a pollination issue, whether it's a late frost issue, somehow it sounds like your flowers and your buds are blasting for some reason or another. And again, I think I would talk. You have a great extension office in Rock County.
Yeah, you do.
In fact, I would check with Mike Maddox at Rotary mm-hmm. Gardens. He can track down and put you in touch with somebody that's a fruit specialist that can help you with that.
It's it could be just the year, too. I mean, we did not have a very good summer for growing a lot of things. It was cold and went wet and when it was supposed to be warm, and so there could be a number of things going on.
Often, if you can't really watch those blossoms, you might not know what, maybe something's eating them off, insects. It could be probably a variety of things.
Thanks for calling. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quick. Some emails here. Peg emailed and said, to control damage from rabbits on trees, why doesn't anyone suggest feeding the rabbits? Putting down some corn or rabbit pellets can help feed these half-starved animals and spare the trees and bushes. Doesn't cost a mint. And kind of gives you a good feeling to know that you've actually helped some small animal.
Well, you're going to probably hear the same objections that you do to trying to trap Japanese beetles, and that is once you start putting down feed for these animals, you may find out you have all of them from the neighborhood. And if that's something that you don't mind and you want to help out and feed those animals, it's interesting. At one point, I thought, I didn't want the squirrels to go after my birdseed, so I put out ears of corn. And what ended up happening was instead of having four or five squirrels, I had all of the neighborhood squirrels. So you might actually create more of an issue for you. And anybody with a garden with some really valuable plants probably is not going to be looking to attract rabbits to their yard because they're not going to eat only and specifically what you're feeding you, what you're feeding them, they're probably going to try to taste a few other things while they're there.
My bird feeder yesterday morning, I looked out and there were a lot of birds, and on the ground there were three squirrels and a couple of mallard drakes.
Oh, wow.
I thought, well, they'll soon be gone. They'll mm-hmm. soon be, and a rabbit and a few doves, and all eating around the bottom of the feeder. Joe in Janesville, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I have a couple questions for you. First of all, I built myself some nice trellises out of big, heavy, sturdy wire. And last year I got that tomato blight, and I'm wondering if when I plant tomatoes this year I need to treat all those cages, if they might still contain the spores or whatever that would cause the blight again this year?
If they're solid metal, no. That won't hold the spores. It's more likely it could be in your soil.
You're going to move your plants to a new spot.
And if you're really concerned at all, I mean, just take a bleach or something over the metal trellises, but I highly doubt that a spore is going to attach itself to the trellis.
Okay, I've got another question for you. I bought a house that's over 100 years old, and there's a small shrub on the property that gets yellow flowers that smell like cloves, and they bloom about the same time lilacs do. Do you have any idea what that might be?
It sounds like forsythia. Forsythia can very well have that odor.
Yeah.
And they're a very common and predominant shrub in this area, lots of different cultivars of different sizes. They also tend to bloom more under what had been the snow level. The buds aren't real particularly hardy for anything that wasn't covered with snow. Have you noticed that on the shrub?
Well, I know what forsythia is, and I know it's not that. Whatever this is, it's very unusual. I've never seen it before, and I'm fairly well-versed in this sort of thing.
You might then have a spring-blooming hamamelis, witch hazel. They have a yellow flower, very, very light, delicate flower. They can also be fragrant as well.
Spring-blooming, just witch hazel, or is it a special
We have Hamamelis virginiana, which is our fall-blooming, but there's also several different species, vernalis, and there's a hybrid intermedia. They bloom in the spring.
Okay.
They can be very nicely fragrant. There's a couple of cultivars. You walk through a garden that has one of these, and it's pretty strong, considering how light and delicate the flower is.
And if I did a search on spring blooming witch hazel, I'd probably find that up.
You should, internet. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Joe. Steve in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I have sort of an elementary question. I missed the first part of your program. My question is, I have some property up north, and I cleared an area to build a cabin, and now I'm interested in putting some pines around the cabin, and I'm looking to find out if it's poor soil, what I can do, number one, to upgrade the soil, but also which pines would I be best advised to plant to get some rather quick growth, or at least the quickest growth of the variety that's there. And I'll take response off here. Thank you.
Well, first and foremost is take a soil sample and take that in. That's going to tell you what you might need to do to improve the soil. And then again, I always advise people that probably the best trees to put into different cultural conditions are your indigenous trees. So if you're looking for pine, our native red pine would probably be your best bet. White pine probably also. You would stay away from some of the ones that are not indigenous to the area, although you would find your Scots pine and your Austrians and some of those. They're pretty tough, so you probably wouldn't have much of an issue. But again, always take soil samples. It doesn't cost that much. It tells you exactly what you have in soil conditions, and then you can take it from there.
Dick in Broadhead, on to you. Hi, Dick.
Ah, yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Earlier on, you were talking about people wanting to get rid of rootstock that they didn't want anymore and they had suckers coming up. I have a plan that I use for that kind of thing. What I do is I take a portable drill, electric drill, and about a quarter-inch bit, and I go out and I cut the stuff off pretty much level with the ground. And depending on the size of the tree, if it's like 4 inches in diameter, I drill in the center of the stump about 2 inches.
Ah, we lost you. Oh, nuts. You might try calling back again, Dick, because we lost the critical information there, and you are out of range or something. We're just not getting you.
Yeah, and just to follow up on what he's saying, most of these chemicals, it does work well to drill a hole in. However, I'm surprised he's having good success drilling it in the center of the tree. All of that tissue in a tree is dead. Yeah. That's your living tissue that's going to transport that chemical is in your cambium or vascular tissue that's a very thin layer just inside of the bark. Yeah. So I have a feeling he might be getting some splashed over into that area, but actually going right down into the center of the tree is probably not going to do you a lot of good. In fact, most of these chemicals will tell you to apply an inner ring around that cambium tissue, where the cambium tissue would be.
Makes good sense. Our guest today, Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest Ed Lyon, director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the UW-Madison campus. Great to have him back, and thank you for listening in. Joan in Baraboo has a question or comment, so let's turn to Joan. Hi, Joan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am very sure that the shrub or bush that the gentleman was asking about around his 100-year-old house is a clove currant. That's where I first found it was my grandparents had it growing next to their farmhouse, which is now considerably more than 100 years old. And the plants I have in my yard came from an old farmstead that has since been destroyed and made into a subdivision, near Baraboo. And it is the most heavenly scent you have ever smelled. I also have, witch hazels, and the witch hazels don't have that. It's a wonderfully, it smells like carnations, kind of a clove carnation smell to it. Mm. And you can smell it as soon as you open the door. I guess what my tip to him would be is look at the leaves of it, and if it looks like a currant bush, because the leaves look very much like a fruiting currant bush, It will undoubtedly be a clove currant, and he can propagate it relatively easily by layering branches. It also suckers, and you can move those suckers. And it's a wonderful old-fashioned bush that you never see for sale anymore, but
it's a great one.
Yep.
Yeah, and he did mention clove specifically, so mm-hmm. I think you're right on target with that one. We have so few plants these days that even have any fragrance,
mm-hmm.
and that is such an old one that did not even come immediately to mind.
Yeah, that's...
But I think both you and he ought to do some propagating.
Yeah, I wish it was available because, people come over and they smell it and they look at it and they say, oh, they'd like to buy one like that. Well, it's just, I don't think anybody is selling it. I think for a number of years, Young's carried it, and now it's not available, but it's wonderful, and he's very lucky to have it, and I think he'll enjoy it for many years to come.
Oh, I hope he's still listening.
I do, too.
I hope so, too. You guys have a good holiday.
Thank you. Same to you, Joan. Appreciate it. All right. Let's turn to Steve in Oshkosh. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have some property up in northern Wisconsin, fairly typical, has a wide variety of trees on it. What I've been noticing is I have some small balsams, soft needle balsam trees, I guess I'm calling them that. But all of a sudden on the end of one branch, the needles will start turning brown, then another branch, and within a year and a half, the whole tree is dead. All right, and I guess I've started to notice that. I've had three or four that's happened, and now I've been paying attention more when I'm driving around the area, and I'm just seeing more and more of that affecting that type of a tree. And I was wondering if you had any idea what was doing it or anything I can do about it.
You know, that definitely sounds disease. As I mentioned earlier, when we start seeing that death go from the outside of the plant inward, either an insect is boring into the end of that branch and either causing the death itself as it bores, or it's introducing a disease into the end of that plant. To be able to diagnose what disease that is specifically, again, that's a case where one needs to cut off a branch and get it into pathology. Doesn't sound good if you say no. It's happening to a number of them up there. It sounds to me like something, hopefully, DNR or extension or some folks up in that area may very well know what's going on and be watching it to see what's happening.
Yeah. It's around... the property is around Three Lakes, Wisconsin. Is there an extension like an Eagle River or Rhineland or someplace where I could get that information?
Yes. So. Actually, if you go to your phone book and go under go to the front, and usually it's in the front, it's University of Wisconsin Extension. It could be under county government, probably under your county government listing in your phone book, and they should list it regardless if it's in your direct city or not. I can't remember if it's Rhinelander or if it's another place where it's located.
Okay. One, I guess, related question. Is it best to, when I see a tree like that, to cut it down and get it, you know, just get rid of it?
Again, it's going to matter. I mean, if it's an insect that's going from tree to tree, then that is one way to eliminate that. Again, it's probably best to diagnose what it is and then follow whatever guidelines they're giving.
So check that out. Your county extension office is certainly going to be able to help you out. Or the DNR office in your area. There is one in Rhinelander, I'm pretty sure. Paul in Barron County, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Paul.
Hello. My question is, I've been cleaning up around the farmyard here, and I've been able to, we're not farming anymore, so some of the pastures and pens and stuff have been turned into lawn. And I've gotten as far out as the windbreak, the pine windbreak around. And I run into the problem of what happens there. I can't mow underneath, and it grows up with burdocks and thistles and all that sort of thing. So I'm wondering if there's anything that I can plant as a sort of ground cover. I know that the ground isn't very good because these pine trees have been there for 50 years or better, but I was just wondering what I can put under there to make it look nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, it's going to depend on how much work you want. Do you want this to be a garden, something that you're going to be working in, or is this something that you want to be able to take care of and then walk away from? There certainly, especially our native woodland plants, would do fine under there, but you have to realize that if you're going to clear out everything in there that's invasive right now and start trying to grow things like woodlands, that's going to be a fair amount of work because you're going to have to treat it as a garden as those plants establish. You don't simply walk away and think that those plants are going to take over. You're still going to have a lot of seed and a lot of issues with those invasives trying to come back. If you're looking simply to keep it clean and not have all these invasive plants in there, the simplest thing is to get those invasives killed off, and then just simply use mulch, and then kind of mulch it every year or two, and then that makes it easier for you to keep those materials cleaned out. So I hesitate. I'm a gardener myself. I love the kind of work that comes with rejuvenating areas like that, but I do try to advise people. That's not what you're looking for. It's only a matter of years. You're probably going to be right back to the same situation you were before, unless you're really looking to garden that area.
Okay, so there's not anything that's aggressive enough to compete with.
There certainly are a number of ground covers. Again, you know, there's non-natives like Pachysandra or Vincas. Again, keep in mind that as you're still going to have to be working within that area. They're not going to instantly establish, take over that area. It's going to take a number of years for those ground covers to take hold, expand out enough to do that. I'm very fond of a lot of the carexes or sedges. Our native Carex pennsylvanicum is a really nice plant to get in there. But again, this is going to be a process. It's going to take you a few years to keep controlling what's already in there as an invasive to get something else established.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
All right. And then there's one other question. In our on one pine tree there is a woody vine that it's growing all the way to the top of the pine tree, and it seems like it has killed off that pine tree. And I haven't noticed it anywhere else except this summer when I was pruning my mother's, these are rose bushes that have been here since they bought the place in the 40s. It seemed to be the same type, only in a lot smaller form, growing in a rose bush. Would you have any idea what type of vine
is it? Woody?
Yes.
Okay, and does it get a nice red fall color?
I guess I haven't really noticed, but yes, I do believe there was red leaves on the one in the pine.
Yeah, that's actually a native vine, and unfortunately...
what is it?
Isn't that awful when the name doesn't come right to you? It's a Parthenocissus, but I can't think of the common name of it. Isn't that awful?
Okay.
But it's very unlikely that it actually killed the tree. It would take a massive vine to completely encircle a tree. I think it's coincidental that this vine went up that tree. Something else probably actually killed it.
Right. The windbreak is getting to the point where they're dying off, so it could be just a coincidence.
Yeah.
I was nervous about was finding it in the rose bush. I don't want to lose that rose bush. Would it be best to dig it out?
Whack it out.
Yeah, and I just thought of the name of it. It's Virginia Creeper. And it's not a bad vine. I actually like it. It can be fairly aggressive. And it's certainly not something you want growing into your rose bush. It's going to outcompete that rose bush.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. And we have a question here from Jim. I was planning to prune my winter berries over the winter anyway and really could see the need after they were flattened to less than half their size at 7 foot height. Carefully remove the snow. What's the correct way to prune these bushes that don't occur to have too much damage? Besides being very tall now, the three of them have rapidly expanded outward. I'm guessing I need to thin them out as well as trimming their height. Would that be correct?
Yeah. By winterberry, I assume he means the Ilex verticillata, our native holly. And again, it sounds like you want to do a combination of things. You want to get the height down, but you're also looking at what we call rejuvenation pruning. And that's where we go in and we take out some of the older stems and let some of the younger ones come back up. They are a shrub that you can do that with. So you can do a combination of both. Take those branches down to a bud, to a size that you want them down to. Unlike some of the trees that I told you can only do 20% on, shrubs of this nature you certainly can come back harder on. Again, it should make it branch out thicker. And if they're getting really, really thick in the interior with a lot of branching, that's where you might want to come in and take out, prune out some of the older branches and let some of the newer ones take up the space there.
And Susan has two kiwi plants, male and female, that are trained over an arbor above a stone stairway. The snow damaged the arbor, so it's going to have to be replaced in spring. And the vines wind around the wooden lattice over the top, so not sure what to do to preserve the vine as much as possible but still remove the broken arbor. Should I cut the vines back so they again grow and wind around the new arbor for support?
That's probably the easiest method to do it. Like you, I probably wouldn't want to give up if it's really has grown quite a fair amount of vine. Certainly,
just produced fruit for the first time this past year.
So, I mean, you can try to carefully pull as much of that vine out and away from the damaged arbor, and save as much of that as you can. Certainly, you can cut it back down to the ground. You'll get fairly rapid growth again. It's the roots on that plant that are generating the amount of growth that you're going to get the next year. So it's getting to the age where each time you cut it back, it's going to generate more growth every year. So again, it's a degree of how difficult is it to get it pulled out in a way. If it's that difficult, then you may just prune it right back down to 6 inches or so.
Dick in Marshall, your turn. Hi, Dick.
Hi, yeah. I had the bright idea of using raised for growing plants.
Raised beds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I started using rubber tires. Well, my son tells me I'm contaminating the world by doing that. Do you have any idea?
Well, he's probably thinking about the fact that there's huge issues right now of all these rubber tires we've dumped in the ocean to create artificial reefs. Mm-hmm. And they're leaching out. We're now spending enormous amounts of money to pull them back out of the ocean because of what they're using rubber tires in your own yard. They are not likely to be leaching anything significant into your soils. It's more... at least at my understanding, you know, having them in something caustic like salt water is causing these things to break down.
Yeah, but I use Boughton potting soil in the soil, in the tires.
Yeah, I can't believe that they're leaching out anything that's going to significantly...
Anyway, you don't think I'm killing the world off by...
No, in fact, right now there's a big trend in using what we call recycled products to make raised beds, mm-hmm. and, you know, rather than going out and using resources that, you know, we're cutting down more trees. Mm-hmm. So they're already produced. You're probably actually... helping the environment by using something that's already...
Well, I just wanted to have a clear conscience.
Okay.
Well, that's a good thing.
Thanks, Dick. Thank you for calling. And Rebecca in Platteville. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. I have an old pear tree, and I'm not going to kill it or anything, but one, it grows straight up. It's at least 20 years old or more. It's not in very good soil. It always produces nicely, but it's... The fruit is very hard to reach, and the fruit is not very tasty. Do you have a recommendation? I would like to plant a pear that, one, I could reach maybe, but two, that would take the clay soil, but also taste good. Any recommendations?
Yeah, again, I'm not an expert on fruits, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Again, here's a great place to talk to Extension. The UW is probably doing research on different cultivars and varieties. I would look to a university or to Extension or even some of our local resources like Junks. Those folks do a lot in the way of selling bare root fruit trees. They could probably give you great recommendations, especially
Absolutely.
For this area.
Okay, I won't ask you about an apricot variety, but I will ask you then one other question. At the end of the year, I bought... two on clearance, something I had never heard of before, called inkberry. It's supposed to be an evergreen. And then somebody said, oh, you shouldn't have planted that. It's going to be invasive. And it's growing nicely. I don't know anything about it.
Inkberry.
Inkberry is an evergreen. That's the trouble with common names. I cannot place that accurately.
Well, it looks like an evergreen. It's not like an evergreen like a pine or anything.
No, you're talking about like a rhododendron.
It's supposed to stay kind of green through the winter. I mean, so far it looked kind of greenish, but it's just a small shrub when I bought it. And someone said, oh, naughty me.
Yeah, offhand, I don't know of any
broadleaf
evergreens we're considering invasive in the area right now. I may be wrong not being able to identify it by its scientific name,
right.
But broadleaf evergreens in our area, most of them are touchy enough. I'm suspicious that it's probably not an invasive.
Okay, well, if anybody knows anything about an inkberry, let me know. I bought it partly because I was intrigued and I've never heard of it before.
Well, we'll see. Maybe somebody will have an answer for us. Thanks, Rebecca, for calling. And David is driving through. David, hi.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
Well, I bought a house for my parents, and back in 1971 when they moved in, they put these silver maples. My mother was a fan of silver maples. I'm not, because they're horrible to split when they die.
Right.
But we had to remove one because it got the fake black carpenter ants in it. And we were worried about it getting into the other one. Well, lo and behold, about 10 years later, the other tree got it in it. But this spring, I noticed them in there. They weren't there before. But I had an exterminator come out, and they used that spray that they use for termites, and we found a hole where they were going to in the tree. And he doused it and sprayed the whole tree from there on down, and the trails they had going through the grass. And I'm just wondering, I don't know the lifespan of a silver maple, and if with that spray, if they just moved down farther into the root system.
Yeah,
I know
they're kind of a symptom. They're not the problem.
Yeah, exactly. Your tree has already got dying issues, and that's the only reason the ants moving in. The ants do not move in and kill the tree. They're moving in because there's enough rot in the tree already that they can make a home in that. It's soft enough for them to make a home. So they're really not doing anything that's further declining your tree. They can only burrow into wood that's soft enough that's already rotted. The tree has other issues that are killing it. And in the context of trees, they're not a long-lived tree, for instance, like an oak that can live in excess of 200 years. We're talking more the 60-year range, and they really start to break up and start rotting. So I'm not sure.
Or even earlier.
Yeah, or even earlier.
It's around 40 years old now.
Yeah, that's
about when they'll probably start declining and having issues. But again, so many times we see sort of a final thing that comes into a tree like that. We think that's what's killed it, when it probably was a series of diseases and other issues that you didn't notice over time. Now that tree has declined to that stage, it seems like, oh, well, the ants must be coming in and killing the tree, and they're really not. They're actually just moving in because the conditions are right for them to do so.
Yeah, the exterminator who came in should have known that too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, I was just curious because I know most maple trees have a lifespan, and I don't know, are all maple trees the same, 60 years, somewhere around in there?
No, they vary. You have hard maples are going to last longer than your soft maples. So there is a variation in the lifespan. Your soft maples tend to be a lot more weak-wooded, shorter-lived. They're what we call a pioneering species. They're some of the first to come out from your woodland and establish. And then the big longer-living cannabis trees sort of follow them. They're very adaptable, and they grow very quickly. But a general rule of thumb, too, is a plant that is extremely adaptable and grows fast is probably also shorter-lived.
Yeah, well, I was looking at trying to replant some trees, and I was thinking about some of those fire maples because, I like the pretty leaves.
Red maple? Yeah, I was going to say probably you're thinking of a red maple. Red maples are harder wooded, longer lived.
And they're
really pretty, too.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling. Yeah,
I'd quit wasting my time, though, spending money on the insecticide.
Yeah, absolutely. David, thank you very much. And Ed, thank you. Boy, the time flew by again.
It sure does.
You'll come back and be with us again?
I will. It's always fun to see what kinds of questions we get.
Ed Lyon is director of the Allen Centennial Gardens, located on the UW-Madison campus. And from the sound of it, they got some really exciting things coming up for you to see this coming year at the Allen Gardens. I'm looking forward to it. I hope you do, too. But he'll be back long before spring, and we'll talk with him again. Monday, Jim fills in for me. We'll talk about liberal education with Tom Plager, dean of the UW-Baraboo Sauk County campus. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.